Good evening, everyone. I'm Tom Lounges, and it's time for Midwest Beat, a show all about the arts, music, and the people behind it. Tonight, we are going to be taking a caller from, from Val Starr. Val's got a brand new album out called Lighter Side of the Blues, and her band, Val Starr and the Blues Rocket, are making some noise. And we're going to hear a lot of the new music. We're going to talk to Val about the blues. We're going to talk to her about her career, and we're going to hear some of the tunes off this great album. So Val Starr will be joining us as we get ready to launch the Blues Rocket tonight on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, and online at lakeshorepublicradio.org. It's all coming up after your headlines here. Good evening, everyone. Thank you for tuning in here at 89.1 FM Lakeshore Public Radio. My name is Tom Lounges, and it's time for Midwest Beat, a program all about music, the arts, and the people who make it. Tonight, we're going to be talking to a gal in California. Well, you see, I figured I'd get warm by proxy since it's so cold here in the Midwest. We've got a gal from Sacramento who is doing some blues. In fact, her fourth album just hit the streets, I believe, which is Lighter Side of the Blues. And we're going to talk to her in just a moment. Her name is Val Starr, and she is riding the blues rocket all the way up the chart. She's been doing very, very well for herself. Her music's a little bit different than Chicago blues. You'll get to hear some of it in just a bit. In fact, why wait? Let's start off by letting the music do the talking while Jose gets Val on the phone. This is Sacktown Heat off Lighter Side of the Blues. Val Starr joins us in just a moment.
Worry.
Sacktown Heat, as I said in the beginning, you know, we're kind of living vicariously through that Cali sound because it's so darn cold here in the Midwest, and that is a different sound than the Chicago blues that we usually feature here, but that's why I thought it'd be fun to do tonight. You see, I kind of fell upon this young lady, her newest album that we just heard something from there, called Lighter Side of the Blues, fell upon my desk, and I promptly stuck it in the CD player, and I've been enjoying it ever since. And I talked to John, who is handling a lot of her marketing, and we have her on the phone. Val, are you with us?
I'm with you, Tom. How are you doing? I'm really missing that Sacktown heat right now. It's cold in Cali.
Is it really?
It is. Well, cold to us is probably not cold to you. It's like in the late, it's upper 40s maybe.
Oh, that's warm for us. Are you kidding? That's a heat wave here in the winter.
It's a heat wave.
Yeah, we've been dealing with a lot of snow and ice. Wow. And all that fun stuff. And that's why I thought this is a perfect time to switch gears a little bit and do a little California Western Coast blues there.
Wonderful.
This, I don't know if I was correct in the beginning. I don't know if you were listening or not, but I had mentioned, I think this is your fourth album. Is that correct?
It is our fifth album.
Fifth album. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm new to the Val Star and Blues Rocket fan club here. I just kind of turned on to you. I've heard of you, but I never really listened to the music until this album fell on my desk. And I want to thank John for doing that. John Ellis.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you. Thank you so much. We are really having a blast. We're actually headed out tomorrow to Memphis to do a little playing on Beale Street. So we're super excited. I'm going to be performing in the National Women in Blues Showcase.
Ooh,
at
okay.
Alfred's.
Now, how many people are there for that? I don't know if my good friend Liz Mandeville's over there this year or not.
Oh, absolutely thousands. There's something like over 200 bands performing over 50 clubs around Memphis.
Wow.
On Beale Street. People coming from all over the world. It's amazing. And the Woman in Blues Showcase is so special because this is actually my second time I performed. And there's women from all over the world. I've met gals from Croatia and from Canada, and we become friends. It's just a wonderful sisterhood of the blues.
It's funny how the blues can infect every culture and country and ethnicity, and you name it, the blues can permeate that and bring people together.
Absolutely, and especially, you know, on this album, I really wanted to bring out the joy that the blues instills in people, because I think people kind of have a little bit of a misnomer about the blues. They think it's kind of, oh, you know, a bummer or a downer or depressing. But the blues is so uplifting and so happy and so inspiring. And you know what? I tell you, Tom, I have never seen a fight break out at a blues concert. People are just always grooving, always loving the music.
You know, I think now that you mention that, I used to book a blues club. I can't remember. In the rock clubs, there's always fights. But at the blues clubs, people just kind of kick back or get up there and kind of shake a little bit.
That's right. And chair dancing is okay, too.
That's true. Now, this album is starting to gain some points on the charts and then radio. Would you say this is the quickest one out of the box that you've enjoyed?
It is the quickest one out of the box. I'm really enjoying this ride. And just the 3 weeks after the initial release, we're top 20 on the national blues charts. And on the contemporary blues chart, we are now top 10. So we're moving up, and we're so excited about it.
Wow. So you're performing in Memphis. Are you going to be touring, obviously, behind this? And when might you be coming to Chicago?
Oh, you know, we're not going to be following up with a tour on this one, but hopefully soon. I mean, you know, there's blues performers. Our dreams are obviously Memphis is one, and Chicago is another one. Chicago blues is amazing. And some of my earlier albums, I do touch upon some great Chicago blues. You know, we play a lot of different styles of blues. I don't like to hone in on one style. I like swing. I like Chicago. I do a little Memphis blues. Kansas City shuffles. We kind of touch upon it all.
Okay. Now, when you do tour and you come to Chicago or the Midwest, what kind of venues are you playing out here?
Well, we haven't done Chicago yet.
Not at all.
From your lips to God's ears, we'll be there soon.
Wow, five albums we haven't had you yet. We got to correct
not
that.
Not yet. We're ready. We're ready for Chicago.
Let's talk about your band. These guys have been with you for a while, especially John.
Yeah, well, John's, you know, he's my ringer. He's we've been together for, well, I'm going to kind of date myself, but we've been together 43 years.
Wow.
And he is my life partner. He is my bass player. He's amazing mixer, engineer, studio engineer, producer, an all-around great guy. So I'm really super lucky, which allows us to kind of go and play different places, just him and I, because between the two of us, we have, you know, guitar, rhythm guitar, bass and vocals covered, and you just throw in a drummer and maybe a harmonica player, and we got the band. So,
right.
So that's real cool. Our guitar player, who's been with us for several years, is used to play with the late, great Frankie Lee.
You're talking about Timothy.
Timothy Prison.
Yeah.
Fantastic player, and he is going to be joining us in Memphis.
Wow. Now, he's super featured on this album, correct?
He is doing all the lead guitar on this album. Yeah, okay. He's fantastic.
So aside
and
from...
Go ahead. Our harmonica player is Frankie Munz.
That
and
name's familiar.
He's the newest to the band. He's just added a really nice new level to the band, and just bringing in that great blues harp. It's just really, really brought a nice feeling to the music. And then lastly, our drummer's been with us all albums, and it's Paul Farman, and he's amazing. I call him my little brother because he's just the best.
So is this Frankie's first album with you then?
It is. We've had other harmonica players on our other four albums.
Okay. When we get... Go ahead.
No, you go.
We keep cutting each other off like that. This long-distance phone thing. I was going to say, let's play another song, and then when we get back, I want to find out how the blues bit you, how you became a blues woman.
You got it.
So let's get a little light. Let's do the title track and Lighter Side of the Blues. This is Val Starr and the Blues Rocket. We'll be back with Val in just a moment. Stay here on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM and the Midwest Beat Program.
So if this hits the spot, you'll hear a lot of the lighter side of the blues.
Who says the blues have to be sad? Not Valstar, that's for sure. Lighter Side of the Blues, brand new music, title track of her latest album, her fifth album. And it's a little bit different than some of the stuff we're used to here in Chicagoland. You'll hear different instruments in here, like the West Coast blues, a lot of brass and a little more, more harmonica, but a little more brass for sure. Val is with us. We're talking with her now about her career, and it starts way before the blues albums did. Val, you have a history in the music business, both on the business side and on the show side and in all different styles of music. Let's start with how you got into the music business. Now, you're from California originally, and you worked for record labels, correct?
I did. I started way back in the late 70s. I was just a young pup. And, you know, back then, women really didn't have a whole lot of choices, career choices. Either you were a waitress or a secretary.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a big klutz, so I definitely was not waitress material. But I could sing, and I loved music. And I figured, why not get into the business and kind of come at it from that angle.
Now you worked the labels. What was the role? Where did you go to as far as what was the ladder for you?
Wow. So I started out in management while managing and working with Quiet Riot, an older rock and roll band.
Oh, yeah.
And then I went to ABC Records in the promotion department and worked there when Tom Petty was just breaking. And it was just an amazing time for music. And from there, I went to Chrysalis Records and was the assistant to the president of Chrysalis for four years.
Mm.
And that was amazing. It was Chrysalis's heyday with Pat Benatar and Blondie and
you had Robin Trower, you had UFO.
Oh, Robin Trower. Oh, God, amazing rock and roll.
Definitely. I was in the record business back then and also as a music journalist and DJ back in the day, and I remember working with a lot of those artists. In fact, Debbie Harry and I got to be pretty good friends, and I was working with David Johansen of the New York Dolls fame, and we were the opening act for Pat Benatar. And I remember working with Pat, and she was a sweetheart of a gal.
So sweet. It was so amazing to see her career grow. I'll never forget, meeting certain celebrities coming through the office, Billy Idol, of course, Deborah Harry, Pat Benatar. And we actually opened for Huey Lewis and the News back then in Los Angeles.
You opened for Huey yeah. with your own band?
Yes, back in our rock and roll days. So that's what we played rock and roll by night, and we worked in the record labels during the day, and it was a great life. It was a lot of fun.
It sounds like it. You had the best of both worlds.
You got it.
You know, a couple of different artists I've interviewed over the years, Mark Farner, John Mellencamp in particular, have always stressed to me, tell all the young artists that it's two words, music, business, learn both, because if you don't learn the business side, you're going to suffer on the music side. And it sounds like you took that kind of advice to heart. You've been, you're well-versed in all of it. So how has your music career at the labels helped you as a recording artist?
Well, so back then in that day, if I'd known what I know now, I probably would have moved out of LA sooner because there's a lot of bands competing there. And mm-hmm. I think A&R guys kind of like to go out of town to find their talent. But went into radio promotion. And then in the late, just before the millennium, I started one of the very first streaming radio networks.
Wow.
And it was just a neat transition, because I always felt like, as I was promoting music to radio stations, seeing there were so many great artists that weren't getting on the radio, and there was only those five slots that everybody was vying for. Mm-hmm. So I saw internet radio as a whole new venue and avenue for artists to get their music played. And really, the rest is history. The actual record labels didn't really help my career because you're working for the president of the label and you do a really good job and he's looking at you like you're my assistant, not mm-hmm. really an artist. But I certainly learned a lot about the business and the promotion and everything you have to do behind the scenes to get your music out there and played.
Right. Now, you guys are on Sandwich Factory Records, which I'm assuming is your own label, because if you and John are the people I think you are from already talking to you, you've got, you've retained control of everything.
We sure do. And the timing is really great now for independent artists. But in the blues, you have a lot, you have, you know, a couple of major labels, your Alligator Records, mm-hmm. MC Records, Viztone. It's just, there's a handful of good labels, but for the most part, there's a lot of independent artists out there. And we've worked very, very hard to build. We have our, a beautiful in-home studio that we do all our recording at. John does all the engineering. And we do all the business and ourselves. Of course, we hire professionals as well to promote and for publicity. But, yep, it's our label, and we retain all the rights to our music. It's wonderful.
Smart lady.
Yep.
Now, being as you are in such tight control, you and John, as the creative outlet, the marketing outlet, the business outlet, production-wise, songwriters, singers, do you get too close to the material? How do you know when it's really good or when you're just assuming it's good because it's your baby? Do you have outside ears that you trust?
That is such a great question. I'm like, when you went through all that, I was like, it made me tired just listening to everything that we do all the time. You know, I think this album, I think, was the first album that I really trusted my gut. John and I worked very well together on this album. You know, being the blues, you got the what we call the gatekeepers of the blues, and you want to stay in that box, but you want to be creative, and you want something a little different, but you have to be blues. So on this album, I wrote songs, and then I let the songs dictate how we were going to present them. The instrumentation, as you pointed out, some of the brass that's in there, and the harp, and some of the keyboard, and I really kind of trusted my instincts on this album, and I think it's paid off. It's the album's very true to me. I'm a very happy gal, and I think the album is very uplifting.
Now, how long did you invest in making this album? Is it typical? Did you write all these songs with this album in mind when it came to sequencing and saying, these are the right songs for this album? Or some of these, some that you've had on the shelf for a while?
That's a fabulous question. A couple of them were on the shelf for a while. I'm continuously writing, and I had this vision for this album. So I did cherry pick some of a couple of tunes that I'd written maybe a year or two ago. Most of the songs were written within the last year, and a couple of them were written right before the album. I thought, it needs a little something here or there. So I, you know, like had this style in mind. Maybe I needed another shuffle or a slow blues. So like All or Nothing Man was written right before the album was, we started the album, because it was like, I really need a nice ballad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that stands out from the album. It's definitely a different tempo.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, when you put on your older hat of being a pitch woman, when you would take singles to radio PDs and say, hey, we want you to play our artist. Now, you're the artist yourself. When you put that hat on and you look at your album, what songs would you pitch, or what songs have you pitched to radio?
Oh, so that's also a really great question. It depends on whether we're looking at strictly a blues station. This album has, I think, a little bit more crossover potential.
Mm-hmm.
To maybe go into some more of the AAA stations. For the blues stations, I thought, of course, All or Nothing Man is a ballad, as well as If She Can Get a Man, Anyone Can. Because it's just got that great, you know, I'm a man kind of flavor.
Mm-hmm.
Lift a Finger is really great swamp blues with a great slide done by John. Interestingly enough, Big Boss Man, my rendition of it, hasn't quite hit yet. I think people are still like discovering songs, because I think you can go very deep into this album. But I think it's great for the women movement right now, and it brings a classic blues song right up to the 21st century and what we're going through today.
And the timing is perfect, because the Weinstein trial just began this week.
There you go. Yep. Yep, yep.
And again,
it's a fun song. I'm not putting guys down. I'm kind of when you have something as serious as the Me Too movement, you really kind of, I wanted to approach it with a little bit of humor, mm-hmm. you know.
Well, it's a fun song, but it still has that message behind it.
Right.
And you took a very powerful blues song that everybody knows and everybody has played, and you've given it a fresh paint, coat of paint, so to speak. You've put your fingerprints on it and turned it in from the other position, if you will. We're going to play that one now, just because I think that is the song people need to hear. This, of course, you'll recognize it as Big Boss Man, but it's subtitled Hashtag Me Too. This is Val Starr and the Blues Rocket on Midwest Beat. Big Luther Dixon tune. Reinvented there by Val Starr, my guest here on Midwest Beat. Val Starr and the Blues Rocket, a brand new album that just came out, Lighter Side of the Blues, came out about a month ago, is all over the charts. And I'm assuming radio's picking up on it, Val, is that correct? Because it is charting well.
They are. It's charting, and we're getting some great airplay all over the country. And interestingly enough, in Europe, we've got airplay in Germany and Netherlands and the United Kingdom and Spain and France.
Spain and France are really into the blues these days.
They are. They are. France is just crazy.
Are there certain songs that are jumping out, or are they all over the board as far as who's playing what?
You know, no one song, except maybe Sacktown Heat, people have been gravitating towards. Maybe it's because it's cold everywhere and everybody wants to hear a warm song, but has really come out. But people are just picking their own songs. 24-Hour Blues is one that they're enjoying. Sacktown Heat, the first track.
Oh, Say Goodbye?
The blues like you mean it.
I definitely want to get to that.
The blues. That's got those horns that are so cool for the West Coast.
Indeed. That definitely separates the different styles of blues. It's interesting how blues can be interpreted in so many different ways by geography.
You know, it really can. Obviously, you know, you got your Mississippi sound. And it's like, you know, you don't really want to put labels on music. You just really want it to, you know, to sound good and feel good, and you want to feel something from it. But, you know, if you have to label it, you have to label it.
Right. You know, there was a time when the Chicago blues purists really didn't embrace the West Coast sound, but I think it's all crossing over now in the last 10 years or so.
Yeah, I agree.
Now, I did say I wanted to find out about how you came to be bitten by the blues and when you shifted to the blues. We started off, you were in the music business. You've been performing for a long time. You mentioned that you were doing a rock band. When did the switch to the blues come and why?
Oh, it's a great story. Great story. Let's see if I can give you the Evelyn Woods version of it.
Okay.
So about maybe 9-10 years ago, John's day job back then, he was a contractor. And he was building large homes out in the Bay Area. And we had moved our family out to Sacramento. But he was still building out there. So he got a weekend apartment out on the beach. It was like my little beach house, you know, for the weekend. But during those weekends, he started hanging out at this little local club that was doing these blues jams. And I'd call him on the weekends, like, where are you? And he's like, well, I'm at this blues club. I'm like, oh, you know, I'm missing out. So Mama came out with her guitar and started hanging out at these blues jams. I was like, I really love this. So we started playing, I started, I'd always like, you know, listen to blues. I programmed a blues radio station for many years. Never had tried my hat at it. And I'd always sang like Pat Benatar and Hart, and I was really good at that, but I'd never really found my voice. I was always, you know, carefully imitating these female rock singers.
Mm-hmm.
And when I found the blues, I found Val Starr. It was just so amazing. And of course, I started singing, you know, Debbie Davies tunes and Etta James tunes and, you know, any type of blues, obviously Bonnie Raitt, I love.
Mm-hmm.
And then as I was, started singing these blues songs, I thought, oh, you know, I could write these. I could write great songs. And so then I started to write, and the rest is history. I think I've written probably 80 songs in about 5 years. So it's been a nice ride.
Now, were you writing rock songs before, or you just started writing when you went to blues?
Yeah, we wrote some rock songs back in the 80s, and, you know, back then, it was all about the record labels, as you know, you were in the business. And so we brought our demo in to, you know, some tastemakers, and at the time, they were like, you sound like Fleetwood Mac, or you sound like da-da-da. And they were looking for the next, I don't know, at the time, it was like kind of punk new wave kind of stuff. And I was still sounding a little bit 70-ish, I guess. So it was like, well, you know, we tried our hand at the rock thing, and ended up continuing to do covers and playing music. But it wasn't until really I found the blues that I found my writing skills and my voice. And it's been a blessing. I've never looked back.
We've seen a lot more women coming into the blues, I'd say, in the last 15, 20 years, maybe even less than that. Back in the day, of course, we had Etta James, and we had Joanna Connor, and we had folks like that, but Coco Taylor. But we didn't have a lot of female artists in the ranks coming up. And we're seeing a lot more of that now. I had referenced my friend Liz Mandeville from Chicago here. Now, she's huge in Europe. She plays all the clubs here. She's on the show often. And your style reminds me a little bit of her in that you've got that blues thing, but you also have a little bit of that pop sound that has retained from your previous music. And it gives you a fresh fingerprint, so to speak, on the blues scene.
Also, I'm writing. I think I like to write songs that resonate with women, right? I'll never forget John and I out here in Sacramento. We did 3 summers of we were actually concert promoters. You can add that to our little list.
Is there anything you haven't done?
No. And we brought in, I mean, amazing. You know, Rick Astron and E.G. Kite and E.C. Scott and Chris Kane and Coco Montoya. And we just had a blast, and my band, you know, opened for them. Mm-hmm. It's a great way to get in front of these players.
That's right. Hold your own parties.
That's all right. Do it ourselves, right? Well, I'll never forget a conversation with E.C. Scott, who was one of, a gal. She's a Bay Area blues singer, and she's just amazing. And she used to tell me, she told me that, you know, she would sing, like, songs that were written by men. And where are the songs that were written by women, you know, talking about women's things. And that really resonated with me. And I said, well, I'm going to start writing some songs that women can relate to. Like, I've got one, Bad Shoes Blues. It's just fabulous. And every woman can relate to that, let me tell you.
Have you recorded that?
Yes, I'll have to send it to you. I'll send you all my earlier albums.
Yeah, I'd love to hear that. I'd love to hear your evolution as a performer and writer. And that said, how would you evaluate yourself as the evolution? You're on album number 5 now. If you go back and listen to album 1 or 2, do you have that cringe factor, or are you still very proud of what you did then?
Oh, really proud of the songs. I'd like to go back and re-record, maybe do a live version of some of them. We've really grown in our recording techniques, and all of our equipment has been upgraded. Our first album was actually analog, if you can believe it.
Wow.
And our album this time, obviously, is completely digital. I think my songwriting's evolved. I think the first album that we did, I was just coming off of rock and roll. So the first album's got a little bit more of rock and blues, and then I really was conscious about establishing myself as a true blue artist. So the next couple albums, you know, really made sure I had a very strong blues factor to get that, you know, respect in the blues community. And as I said earlier when we were speaking, I think this album, I was just true to myself, and I really think this is my best album.
So you've hit your stride with this album. Wow. What's going to go on? You mentioned you're playing Memphis, and you're hoping to get on the road soon. I mean, how are you going to get the music out there? The best way to do it is to get it in front of people. Where are you playing? Are you sticking strictly in California? Or?
Yeah, we're playing regionally here. We do festivals here, Idaho. We go up into Oregon and play. We definitely, you know, it's the cart before the horse. An agent to get in, but you need airplay to get or sales to get an agent. It's kind of a real paradigm shift in the music business right now. It's, you know, people are listening to Spotify. One of the guys that interviewed, we got a great interview from a UK publication. At the end of the review, he said, buy, don't Spotify, you know. And it's really hard to figure out how to sell your product. And once somebody has heard it on the radio in Chicago or Memphis or, you know, where do they follow up? Do they go to Spotify to buy it? Do they go to iTunes? You know, we have the album available on our website. But, you know, the sales aspect is really something that musicians are really trying to reinvent and figure out right now. Are people really out there buying our music? Luckily, our demographic is a little older.
Mm-hmm.
So I think older people may be more, you know, interested in owning their music rather than renting their music.
You'd be surprised how many young folks are, too. I also own a record store, and
we
specialize in vinyl, but we do the CDs and cassettes and everything else still. And I'm seeing a mixed even keel of between the young folks who are turning on to the vinyl and turning on to the music, the older music because of their parents, and the older folks that are turning back on to their childhood music because their kids are digging it. So it's like, oh, this is common ground. My son loves Led Zeppelin, or my son loves Muddy Waters. I'm going to go out and buy some more. Now they're bonding over this classic music, whether it's rock or blues or pop or country. It doesn't seem to matter whether you're a Johnny Cash fan or a Muddy Waters fan. I'm seeing a lot of the family shopping again, and that's very inspiring as someone who loves music as much as I do.
I know we really need to get people. That's such a great line. That what you just said is it's we need to get people to love music again.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's been kind of like a gap of time, and I also think that young people are listening to more roots oriented music, bluegrass and Americana and blues. It's a good time for roots music.
It is. We're seeing a lot more string instruments coming in. The Avett Brothers and Mumford & Sons, and so many different artists are coming back with the old-timey kind of sound, but bringing it up to date.
Right.
And this year is the first year that vinyl is outselling digital music. And that said, do you have any intention of pressing vinyl on any of the music, especially the latest one?
You know, I haven't really thought about it. It might be a good idea to do a limited press of vinyl, maybe on our next album or on this album. I have no idea how much it costs or whether
it takes a little time because, of course, when vinyls went under back in the big box days and the CD exploded, a lot of the pressing plants sold their presses thinking they'll never use them again, sold them for scrap metal. And we're seeing a lot of artists struggling to get, it's a long waiting game to get your music out on vinyl.
Gotcha.
But I've noticed a lot of artists of all different genres are saying that they're selling a ton of vinyl over CDs for two reasons. One, because people are into it again, and B, because it's a nice big piece of art that they have the artist sign and then they frame it. So it's kind of a double-sided sword. I mean, it is neat to be able to pick those albums up and read the liner notes again and have room for liner notes again.
Oh, remember those days?
Yes.
We all sat around and put on an album and passed the album around and read the liner notes and looked at the art. And those were good days.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be nice if something like that came back with the kids.
That's true. So maybe that's something to consider, you and Johnny, to talk about that. Do a limited run. Try it out. When you play some shows, see if it sells.
We'll send it to you for your record store.
I would love to sell your stuff. I definitely would. I'd love to have you come out here. Are you doing any Midwest states in the near future?
Not in the near future, unfortunately.
Because I thought maybe with summer coming up, there's a lot of fests going on. And
Put in a good word for us out there.
I will. I work with a lot of blues artists out here. We'll see if we can bring you guys up and have you part of a package or something here.
You got it. We'll be there. Bells on.
Speaking of liner notes, I am looking at yours, and I see a very sweet dedication to Raymond Canny and Al Luca. That usually means those people, when you make a dedication, were very instrumental in somehow your creative talent. What was the history there with Ray and Al?
Oh, Ray was one of the very first gentlemen that we met in the blues scene here in Sacramento, one of the very first ones, and he unfortunately passed away last year. And Al was a very, very dear friend of ours who just, I got to tell you, he every once in a while you meet somebody that makes you feel so humble, who loves your music so much, and he loved my music, and it just made me feel so special. He used to tell me that I was his Elvis.
Aww.
And to have somebody say that to you, it's just, you can't even describe it. And he unfortunately passed away, and we miss him. So I wanted to definitely dedicate this to two great guys that loved the blues and loved our music.
Well, that's very sweet. And it's always nice when your fans and the artists connect in such a special way that that they matter that much. And we don't see a lot of that with the younger, I don't want to say younger artists because that's generalizing, but say some of the newer music that's more impersonal, that's more computer-driven or electronic-driven as opposed to flesh and blood and strings and calluses and, you know, all the things that make music great. We see a lot of that distance between the fans and the artists, and it's coming back with this oldie, old-time kind of sound again.
Yeah, you have to be true in the blues. You really do. People recognize and it resonates truth and honesty, I think, has to be in music, especially in the blues.
Mm-hmm. If you just joined us, you're listening to Lakeshore Public Radio on the dial at 89.1 FM, NPR Radio. You can also stream us at lakeshorepublicradio.org. And don't forget, this show will also be repeated this Friday at 7 p.m. It'll be repeated here on both the stream and on the air signal. And then we'll be archiving it forever and ever and ever at the website. So be sure to check it out. If you missed part of it, go back and listen. If you are enjoying it, you want to turn people on to Val's music, now you know how to do it. And you can also keep up with them at ValStarRR.com. That's the website. And on Facebook, is it ValStar or ValStar and the Blues Rocket?
ValStar and the Blues Rocket.
All right. And a cool name. How'd you come up with that?
We were coming from rock and roll, and we thought Blues Rocket, like rocking it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's how that came about.
Well, I noticed your logo is the flying V, and that is normally a rock thought of guitar, not so much a blues guitar. And I looked at that at first, and I'm like, okay, that's kind of rock and roll, and it's blues. So that was the first thing I looked at when I saw your logo was, I don't see many flying Vs anymore.
Yeah. I have a beautiful one. It's amazing.
I do love the art on the album, and it's a scale because we're talking about the lighter side of the blues. You got the heavy harmonica, you get feathers on one, and then your guitar as the middle post. Where did the design come from? I really like that. It kind of really speaks to the title.
Thank you. Thank you. It was my idea, and I put all the artwork together and did the photo shoot, and that guitar is actually, isn't that a cool guitar?
It is very cool. Are those little records on there? Is that what that is?
Yes.
That's
very
cool. That
guitar is 12 inches high.
Wow. I would have thought it was a regular size guitar that you just reduced down.
Right, right. And so then we got the scale, and obviously you got the idea of the lighter side of the blues of the harp and the feathers.
Mm-hmm. Very, very cool.
It worked.
It did. Did you design the covers of your past albums, too?
Yep, we sure did.
Excellent. What have we not covered, Val? We're down to a couple of minutes here that you would like people to know about yourself and your music.
Once again, we love the blues, and remember that the blues is everything. It's to everybody. It's passion. It's happiness. It's joy. It's sadness and sorrow. And if you're not into the blues, check it out and don't get turned off. Just keep an open mind and try the blues. I'm not looking back ever. Rock and roll. We want the blues.
All right, we got time for another song as we say goodbye. What would you like us to play? What do you want people to hear that we haven't played?
Why don't you play the first song on the album?
Hey, that's a good way to say goodbye.
You to the blues like you mean it. And I've enjoyed myself. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We will definitely be in touch. I look forward to hearing some of your other music, and I will keep my ears open and my eyes open for possible dates to bring you guys down here. It'd be great to have you.
We'd love to do it.
All right. Val Starr and the Blues Rocket. You can find them online. You can find them on Facebook. You can find them right here. Say goodbye to the blues like you mean it, and I'm saying goodbye to you. I'm Lounges. I'm out of here. Adios.
Well, I know you've been watching.